Tuesday, November 26. Now it is time to get the wheels of life rolling again. So Mr. West came out from the White House to the Elms this morning, and we talked about moving 3 suits of furniture down to occupy the rooms that would so soon be vacant. That from my bedroom to go into Mrs. Kennedy's, from Linda Bird's to go into Caroline's, from Lucy's to go into John John's. We talked about how much could be stored at the White House in storage spaces and how much I would need to send to commercial storage or government warehouses. This is one of my first encounters with Mr. West, and I have the feeling I'll be seeing a lot more of him. And then at 3 o'clock this afternoon was the most important event of the day. I went down to the White House to see Mrs. Kennedy to discuss the housekeeping details that any woman moving out would talk over with any woman moving in. There was a lovely tea table spread, and we sat down together in the private sitting room, the family sitting room, called the West Hall. She was utterly composed and radiating that peculiar sort of aliveness and charm and warmth that has, well, she's quite an indescribable fresh flower, but I won't try to describe her then, except that there's a great element of steel and stamina somewhere within her to keep on going as she is. She told me that 2 people in the house that I could always depend on were Mr. J.B. West, who knew more about it than anybody else, and Mr. Ketchum, the curator. She said, incidentally, Lady Bird, never tell a waiter if you don't like this particular type of cookie that you'd rather have a macaroon, because you will not see that butler again for 2 weeks. He'll be gone on vacation. They'll be off time. Just tell everything to Mr. West. She told me that she would like to ask a favor of me. And the way she asked it, if it had been to chop off one's right hand, one would have said, sure, just that minute. What she wanted was to let the school go on in progress on the 3rd floor, the school where Caroline and about 20 of her young playmates in the kindergarten and the 1st grade go to school. They plan to do something different after Christmas, but it would not be a good idea to disrupt them right now. And that was the easiest, the most delightful thing to say yes to. She went on to say a lot of things, like, don't be frightened of this house. Some of the happiest years of my marriage have been spent here. You will be happy here. In fact, she repeated that over and over as though she were trying to reassure me. Then we got up and walked around from room to room so that I could see how my furniture would fit into her bedroom. And it's going to do very nicely. And then into her sitting room, or rather, I guess you should call it a dressing room, which is one of the most exquisite rooms I ever saw, with the closets all covered with trompe-l'oeil, little pictures of profiles and courage and Caroline at 2 and a yacht at Hyannisport, all the things that mean something to her. There is a stamp, a trademark on it that will not be repeated by anybody for a long while in quite that exquisite way. And for me, so much work will have to come first that I expect it will just, it will turn into an office rather than a dressing room, and it will get short shrift, at least in the first few months. We talked about the servants. She told me that the French chef, René, was absolutely divine, although everything he did was very rich. In fact, she used the words, Jack never likes those rich things that he does. Neither one of us noticed the present tense. Or rather, neither one of us was it evident in our manner that we had noticed it. But she said Renee had absolutely no temperament, which is divine in a Frenchman. And I know I'm going to be awfully fortunate to have him. We walked through the hall, and she pointed out the bust of Houdon, which, the bust by Houdon, the famous French sculptor, done somewhere around, 1795 or thereabouts. It's of the chaplain and George Washington's army. It is the single most valuable gift to the White House. And she told me the absolutely incredible value that's put upon it. And it is an anonymous gift. Anonymous, I hope, to everybody except the IRS. We went into the lovely yellow room where the Cezannes are, and that obviously is what she likes best in the whole house, or so I thought. And there on the table were the black boots, the boots that were on the riderless horse in the funeral procession, and there was the flag folded. Then we went into the two rooms that would be Linda's and Lucy's, and are now Caroline's and John John's, and such exquisite little gay perfections of rooms. They're just like a confection. Caroline's especially, pink and white, sprigged, delicate material on a canopied bed, and pictures everywhere, some of them that they themselves did, I think, and I believe one or two by Mrs. Kennedy. There was a cot lying in the middle of the room that was occupied by President Kennedy. She said, Stash is in here. He absolutely refuses to sleep in Jack's bed. In fact, there were several Kennedy family members sort of running in and out of doors as we wended our very business-like way through the halls. Finally, close to 5 o'clock, we went down to the East Room, where Lyndon was meeting with the Alliance for Progress to reassure them of our country's continued strength and interest in them. We took our seats very quietly behind him, just as a sort of symbol, I think, and sat and listened to his speech. It is doubtful that anybody else is the star where she is present. But all the more, my heart went out to the bravery of Lyndon, who marches into this circumstance with so much determination and not all the preparation that one would have sought for if one could have foreseen one's destiny at 16. Then in the evening, I went home to dinner for the comfortable companionship at the Elms of June and Bill White, Nancy Hanchman Dickerson and her husband, Abe and Carol, the Thornberries, and the Jack Brookses.